One of my Rebbeim used to point out that Parshas Miketz is a mace mitzvah. That is to say, everyone gets so involved with Chanukah during the week of Parshas Miketz that people don't spend enough time talking about the Parsha. So let's do both Miketz and the Parsha a good favor and turn around and focus on the Miketz, but with eight different thoughts. Torah tells us, Vayhi Miketz Nasayim Yamim, and it was at the end of 2 years. In the commentary side of Medrash, which notes that Yosef was given 2 extra years because he said to the Sar HaMashkim, Kiyam Zechartani, that you should please remember me. The question has to be asked, wasn't that really a function of Ishtadlus? Wasn't Yosef really trying to bring about his own release through the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why is that so wrong? Why is Ishtadlus considered unimportant? The Chazon Ish seems to suggest that a man of Bitachon applies his Ishtadlus when he knows that it's going to work. Yosef knew that the Mitzrayim were a narcissistic and selfish people, and that it was unlikely, almost impossible, to expect one of them to remember him. And thus the request of Yosef, not once but twice, Kiyam Zechartani Itcha, was an act of desperation on his part. And it was for this reason that Yosef received the extra 2 years. A man of Bitachon reaches out and does Ishtadlus for what makes sense, not for things that don't make sense, as though they're harping out of desperation. Rabbi Wein also seized on the words miketz. Ketz, says Rabbi Wein, usually denotes an end of an era. However, he says, implicit in the use of the word ketz is the understanding that nothing lasts forever. By the way, neither is anything certain to man, since after all, at the end of the day, all relies on the hand of Hashem. And we see that clearly over here with Yosef as well. Here we find Yosef in the depths of despair, on the bottom of the lowest rung of a social class that strongly ruled Egyptian society. And yet, in a moment, at the end of 2 years, the bottom of the social class turns the social structure of Egypt upside down. And now here's Yosef sitting on the top of the class. Hence, the word ketz is quite important and quite significant, as well as appropriate. Think also about the Pesach Seder, when we point out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the same for us as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chishav es haketz. You have to understand that in Judaism, things can turn around in a moment for the Jew. And of course, as we hope that those things happen, we hope that that turnaround is letov for our betterment. So then, after Paro hears the interpretation of Yosef and Yosef's advice, he turns around and he says to the Egyptians, Hanimtzaka ze'ish, Asher Ruach Elokim bo, can you find somebody like him, a man with the spirit of Hashem? And I understand, if there was wisdom, energy, we were dealing with wit, those would all be job qualifications for the position of a viceroy. But Ruach Elokim, especially in Egypt, doesn't really seem to be a necessary job description. So why, therefore, does Paro care about it? So the great Gaon Rav Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi Shlita points out that Yosef did not simply want to do his job. He was asked to provide interpretation of a dream. But because Yosef had something extra inside of him, he wasn't content to simply do his job. He felt that he had to go beyond himself and his responsibility and offer advice. Rabbi Mordechai explains that only one with the spirit of Hashem, only one who has that spirit that says, be meitiv, try to do better for other people, looks at a situation and offers advice on top of the mission that he or she is assigned to do. It's that extra piece that's invaluable for the success of any project and its leader. And it was that extra piece that's called Ruach Elokim that Paro recognized and found within Yosef. Rabbi Baruch Mordechai goes on to explain, we find that in our Gedolim. He uses Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal as an example. A man who's often asked Shilas, and when he was asked Shilas, he would often provide an answer, and then after offering the answer, would turn around and say, Aval ha'itzai l'chai kacha. I find my advice to you is to proceed in this particular manner. Not just simply mutter, usser, mutter, but to turn around and say, good, now that you know what the halacha says, now let's figure out how to deal with the situation. After Paro goes ahead and addresses Yosef, he turns around and he says to Yosef, "Acharei hodia Elokim es kozos lecha Ein chacham enavon kamocha. After Hashem revealed all this to you, there's none who is as wise as you are. Rosh Hashanah pointed out that it seems surreal that Paro's dream should occupy such a prominent place in the Torah. And think about it, with such detail and repeat, etc. And yet he adds, if you think about it, according to one version in the Gemara, this same Paro later turns on the Jewish people and makes it seem as if he never heard of Yosef. How could that be? How could somebody who was so enthralled with Yosef later turn around and actually deny that he existed? Says Roshach, actually the Torah is teaching us the value of that power we call Bechira, of free choice. Each human being has the ability to see the hand of Hashem and or to reject it. The choice is up to us. A man like Paro can choose to see the hand of Hashem in the words of a prisoner and recognize godliness, or he can choose to reject the wisdom of his own viceroy with a proven track record. So anyway, getting back to Yosef, Yosef marries Asnas and he winds up having two children before the famine years start. And he calls the first one Menashe. And why does he call him Menashe? Because, as Yosef says, Ki nashani Elokim es kol amali beis avi. He says, because Hashem made me forget all my troubles at my father's house. Question has to be asked, why would Yosef praise the ability to forget? Says the Netziv, you have to remember, Yosef would have been overcome with post-traumatic stress disorder and would not have been able to accomplish what he accomplished in Mitzrayim unless he had that power to forget. But Moshe Sternbach offers a different possibility. He suggests that Yosef forgot the message of his father's house. He forgot to be uninterested in the mundane and focus only on the spiritual. Says Rav Sternbach, if Yosef were never able to forget that message, Yosef wouldn't have been able to save the Egyptian economy. You see, sometimes, says Rav Sternbach, Hashem selects different missions in life for different people, and those missions in life don't always line up with the plans that we assume for ourselves. The ability to switch gears in the practical while staying focused on the ultimate goal, Ratzon Hashem, is critical if we're going to taste the success of fulfilling the missions that HaKadosh Baruch Hu selects for each and every one of us. Later on, we find that Yaakov Avinu sends the brothers down to Yosef. However, he doesn't send Binyamin because he was afraid. Pen yikra'enu ason. The word yikra'enu seems to imply that the issue was preordained. And yet, when next week's parasha, when Yehuda tells the story to Tzafnas Paneach, he doesn't use the word yikra'enu. Instead, he uses the word v'karahu ason, which implies circumstance and coincidence. The great Magid Rav Yaakov Galinsky notes that a Jew has a responsibility to know that nothing in life is circumstance. Hence, Yaakov Avinu told his son, we're worried, maybe it's preordained that Binyamin should get into trouble. However, when Yehuda spoke to Tzafnas Paneach, he used the word v'karahu, the word coincidence, because he assumed that a non-Jew couldn't fathom something with the understanding that everything in life is preordained. Later, Yosef gets into an argument with his brothers. He tells them that Meraglim Atem, you're Meraglim. And the brothers answer that they are all children, Kulanu B'nai Yishachad Nachnu, we're all the children of the single man. We're not Meraglim. The question has to be asked, how could Yosef offer an outright lie in order to protect his ruse? How could he be a man who doesn't tell the truth? Rav Soloveitchik once noted that he wasn't lying. Yosef was answering on a different plane than the brothers were commenting. The brothers were speaking about the here and now, and Yosef was speaking about Jewish destiny as foretold by his dreams. Yosef was telling the brothers that they had to understand they were the first centuries heading into Egypt to check out the land, and that they were going to be the originals of a large nation that were destined to descend into Mitzrayim. A Mitzrayim whose weakness had to be exploited by the Jews if they weren't going to assimilate into the Egyptian culture. Ervas ha'aretz basim liros, that you're going to see the nakedness of the land, is a reference to the very weakness of Egypt, namely that in Egypt the people were quite corrupt in terms of their families. People were not necessarily true to their marriages. And by knowing this, the Jews would learn to act differently and to stay away from that style in the future. And thus Yosef tells the brothers, Miraglim Atem, you're there, learn, so that you don't get into trouble. Finally, one thought on the Haftorah. This coming Shabbos is Shabbos Chanukah, and so we read a special Haftorah from Zechariah. And in the context of the Haftorah, we read about an image of Yoshua Kohen Gadol, who's wearing Begadim Tzoim, soiled clothing. Why would the Kohen Gadol of the Second Temple era be wearing soiled clothing in this Nevuah? Rashi notes that Yoshua's children had intermarried. And the fact of the matter is, says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Yoshua could have stopped them by voicing his opinion, and he did not do so. Accordingly, in the Haftorah, he's seen as wearing a dirty garment, until at least Ezra's time, when due to the efforts of Ezra, the very children of Yoshua divorced themselves from their non-Jewish wives. Mashgiach and Karen Biavna, Rabbi Avram Rivlin Shalita, highlights that the importance of getting up and voicing an opinion when you see a wrongdoing and you can impact the situation is crucial. It could be noted that this here might be our connection to the special Yantif of Chanukah, because Chanukah too was a time when a group of people jumped up and said, no, there's a wrongdoing that's going on in society at large, and we're going to stand up and voice our opinions against it. In our generation as well, there are times where we see a lot of wrongdoing. Our responsibility is to stand up for what we believe in, a truth which is Torah true, and may HaKadosh Baruch Hu protect us always. A Shabbat Shalom and a Chanukah Sameach.